Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. No matter how much we love our pets, most of us recognize animal-related ick factors that may strain our relationships with them. How much an ick strains a relationship can vary, depending on the person and the nature of the ick involved. Given the prevalence of these icky gremlins lurking in the woodwork of even the best human-animal relationship, I've decided to out the most common of them. Not surprisingly, animal waste products deposited in what we consider the wrong places heads the list. While some dogs or cats may perceive peeing or pooping on their owner's bed as the ultimate act of love, few owners of those beds would agree with this. Upon discovering the ick deposit, accusations of animal spitefulness, stupidity, jealousy, and demon possession flow from formerly doting pet owners as readily as promises from a politician. Some folks feel so sure of their diagnosis that nothing will change their minds. Compare this to another ick factor, vomit. Cat or dog barf anywhere except where we don't need to clean it up disgusts many of us. But most people also realize that this belief, and any corresponding rant aimed at the vomiting animal, is irrational. The reason for this is simple. Even though we'd like to forget them, most of us can recall at least one time when we vomited in the wrong place. That is, just about anywhere other than the toilet. We can remember how grateful we were to the understanding host or flight attendant who didn't make a big deal about it, or how lucky we were at that party to make it outside to some secluded clump of shrubbery where we could upchuck without fear of discovery. Consequently, and unlike the canine or feline who pooped or peed on the bed, we're more likely to apologize after the fact to the barfing cat or dog we harangued in the heat of the moment. I probably shouldn't bring up a quirk of canine anatomy here that may cause you to rethink this. But what the hey? It might enable you to win a trivia contest someday. Cats, horses, and humans only have voluntary control over the muscles in the anterior portion of the esophagus, the tube that transports food to the stomach. Smooth or involuntary muscle lines the rest of it. This means that once something gets beyond that voluntary portion of the esophagus, cats, like us, won't be able to reverse its direction easily. On the other hand, and probably because dogs are gulpers who will eat all kinds of strange things compared to more discriminating cats and people, voluntary muscle lines the entire length of the canine esophagus. In this regard, dogs are more like cattle and sheep. But unlike cattle and sheep, dogs aren't ruminants, and they don't chew cuds. However, they can and do vomit more easily than cats and we do. So while we should cut our cats the same slack we grant ourselves when they barf up a food-coated hairball or semi-digested rodent parts, I suppose we should expect our dogs to make it to the door, or at least off the furniture or rug, before doing likewise. But in both canine and feline cases, this assumes that the sight or sound of the barfing animal doesn't make us feel like we're going to hurl any moment too. In addition to assuming a solid or liquid form, companion animal ick also may assume a gaseous state. For most of us, The only thing worse than emitting such a cloud in the presence of anyone except a small handful of trusted friends is the dog cutting loose any time, any place, anywhere. For as much as fart funnies may delight legions of youngsters and a small group of adults, most people find it difficult to laugh when their own animals emit a noxious cloud that causes others to turn green. If they do laugh, chances are that those present when the gas bomb explodes won't appreciate their laughter. The last icks consist of those that exude an aura of sexual deviation of some sort. These include behaviors such as Cordelia's licking of her nether regions and Bruno's excessive interest in his balls and other animals' butts, including some human ones, or Pedro's leaping greeting that includes a view of his unsheathed penis, something few visitors to his owner's home want to see. And all those dogs and cats who masturbate or hump legs, stuff toys, blankets, pillows, other animals of the same or different species, whatever works, often at the worst times. Owners' responses to these icks are akin to those experienced when facing death. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and hopefully, but not always, acceptance. But enough. You get the idea. What makes the icks important is that all of these are considered fair game for negative human emotional interpretation and response, with little concern about what these may mean to the animal source of them. This is unfortunate because what we consider something gross that we want gone ASAP may be a gold mine of information, albeit an icky one, about our animals' physical and behavioral health. This isn't to say that we can't get upset when these events occur. According to some psychologists, we couldn't not get upset, even if we wanted. Those learned folks maintain that this is a remnant of some deeply rooted human response that serves some long-forgotten protective function in our ancestors' early cave-dwelling days. So if you must emote because our ancient brains make us do it, strive to do it quickly, and then think about what the ick means to your animal. Animals who pee, poop, fart, or vomit in what their people consider the wrong places far more often than not have legitimate reasons, and sometimes multiple reasons, for doing so. Medical problems that irritate the lining of the gut or urinary tract may cause some of these behaviors. So may stress in the animal's physical or mental environments, or both. Perceived icky sexual displays also may signal medical or stress-related behavioral problems. In all of these cases, it may take a little detective work to sort things out, but it can be done. At one time or another, most of us like to think we're the center of the universe and throw a hissy fit if something happens that doesn't please us. But when our animals do icky things that could signal legitimate medical or behavioral problems, shouldn't be one of them.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.